when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, good afternoon or good evening, people out there, all of our beloved listeners, or wherever you may be, depends on what time zone you're in. We're in Central Standard Time here in Tennessee. But me and Sam are rocking and rolling tonight. Last week, we had some panic spells. I had some tech stuff that went down, and I'm just about as tech savvy as a chimpanzee. And Sam, thank God Sam's around. Sam's like our... I'm old enough to be Sam's dad, but he's almost like our dad when he's around. I mean, when something goes wrong, man, we go running to Sam. I'm not kidding you, buddy. He can solve the problem. Anyway, we have a great show tonight. But before we get going, listen, y'all, I'm going to say a prayer. It's, if you will, just bow your head. And I'm going to do, I know I butcher the prayers a lot, but I'm going to do the best I can. Anyway, please bow your head, people. Oh, Lord, I would like to ask you to forgive me for all my sins. Forgive my brothers and sisters for our sins, if you will, if they will repent. Look not upon what I truly deserve. Give me your grace, Lord. Please don't punish the way I deserve to be punished, but give me your grace. I would like to ask you to protect me, my family, this radio station, Sam, all of our wonderful friends. Lord, I'd like to ask you to please look after the white race. We're under such attack. If you just look right here in the United States, what's been going on in the Congress this week, how they're really all this anti-Semitism, anti-Hindu, anti-Jew, Sikhs, immigrants, you name it, Africans, Native Americans, anti-this, they laughed at us. You see what's coming. Oh, Lord, they're coming to exterminate us, oh, Lord. Anyway, Lord, I ask you to please bless us. Like I said, bless this radio station. And, oh, Lord, if you will, get this station in this country on a great renaissance, turning back to you, oh, Lord, because without you, we cannot succeed in surviving in this world. Anyway, I ask this all this in Jesus' name. Amen. People, before I go any further, I'd like to put out a great shout-out to our one and only donor so far. We've had two donations from a great guy. His name is Kenneth E. from New York. And we ballyhoo, we talk about our pride of being Southern and all this stuff. But I'm going to tell you what, I've always said that Southern is a state of mind. It's Southern is in your heart. But Kenneth E., I surely appreciate what you've been doing. Thanks to Kenneth, we now, Blood River Radio people, believe it or not, we have a business account. We have $200.99 in it. And most of that came from Kenneth E. $5 came from Lee Cochran. Yeah, Lee's last out of the big time spenders. Anyway, people, I would like to tell you that tonight we have a guy coming on. I was about wee-wee about pants. I got so excited when we finally landed him. His name is M.S. King. He's the author of The Bad War. And, you know, G. Andrews, one of our staff members here with Blood River, Gene Andrews. I like to call him Mr. Marine Jeans. He's going to pretty much be driving the interview because he's read the entire book. There's very little probably that he doesn't know about the book. But and Gene, I told Gene back in, I think in October, I promised Gene if we ever had a chance to get M.S. King on that he could drive the interview. And I'm going to tell you what, I got to give thanks to Tex Mars and his secretary, Michelle, because without them, I wouldn't have landed M.S. King. I've been trying to get in touch with him for a couple of months, but for some reason, he told me that all my communiques had been blocked. He had not seen a single one of them. So I certainly think my thanks are out to Tex Mars because they have to get us on. Guess what? And I'll go ahead and tell you what's going to be on March the 16th. We have another humongous author coming on. I can't believe I'm getting these people. His name is Tom Goodrich, and he's kind of in the you might say the same cloth as M.S. King, Michael King. He wrote one of the books he wrote that I'm really impressed with is Hellstorm. A couple of our guys here, once again, I know Rich and Gene and some other people have read that book. I think Rich told me that actually it upset him so bad he couldn't hardly get through all of it. But March 16th, Tom Goodrich is going to be on. He's going to be talking about his book with Hellstorm and Ike Baker. Ike Baker, who was on last week, he specifically requested he could come in and drive that interview. So Ike and will be on the 16th. But tonight, like I say, in just a few minutes, we're going to bring Michael King on, and we're going to bring Gene Andrews, Mr. Marine Jeans. We're going to bring them on. And also, before we go to them after the first break, if I have time, I got to explain myself a little bit. And you'll probably think I'm some kind of a nutcase. But I think what I'm most proud of the guests we've had on so far was the one last week. And before you say what a nutcase I am, let me explain myself. Before, I talked to my friends, to Sam, to James, to other people, and I said, before I die, I want to stick my thumb in the eyes of the establishment. I want to do stuff that no one else will touch with a 1,000-foot pole. People all the people I just named can verify this. I tell them, if I get my own radio station, I want to get the Klan on. I want the Ku Klux Klan on. We've already had them on two or three times. And you know what? They're tamer than I am. They're more gentlemanly than I am. They're more intellectual than I am. It's nicer and sweeter. But anyway, we've had them on a couple of times. And I said I wanted to get the Nazis on. So thanks to Matt Goodwin, he was able to run the Nazi down. We had the deputy chief of operations, chief of staff for the American Nazi Party. We had him on last week. And we'll probably try to have the chief on in the near future. But he did a pretty good job. I thought Ike did a little better job. But anyway, we had them on. And let me tell you what, people. I don't care what you think, whether you agree or disagree with Nazis or Klansmen or whatever. We have this thing, although it's dead now, called the Constitution of the United States. And the very first bill in the Bill of Rights is the First Amendment. And that's free speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, et cetera, et cetera. You should know that. You know, I have a hard time remembering it. But if we can't allow anybody to come on because we, you know what, I'm so sick and tired of people telling me this. Oh, in secret, I don't know. I don't have a single friend. I can name them all on one hand with four fingers left over that will, well, I'll say, you know what, what about the Nazis? What do you think about them? Well, they'll say, yes, the Nazis were good people. Hitler was a good guy, but we just can't say it. No, we just can't. So we got this fireball radio station, but we just can't say it because we're going to be branded. Oh, the people out there, the great unwashed masses, you know, they're not as intelligent as we are. They're way below us, our level. They can't understand. They can't research and for themselves and find out that everything that's been said about the Nazis, everything that's been said about the Klan, they were horrible. They're the spawn of Satan. The whole thing is said about us. Well, if we have time before the end of the show, if we run out of steam with our guests, I'm going to expand further on this. Anyway, people, buckle your seatbelts and get ready because we're going to have Mr. Marine Jeans on, and he's going to be driving this interview with the great one and only Michael King and the Bad War. So hang on to your seats, people. Be right back.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused border agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. defendapatriot.com.
Recent studies show that parents who smoke in the home are more likely to have children who smoke.
Yes, in fact, my brother, he's 22 now, he told me and my father that's why he started smoking. One of the reasons why he started smoking is because my dad was around, you know, and they saw my dad smoking. My dad said, okay, I don't want you to smoke. I don't want you to, you know, watch what I'm doing.
Recent studies also show that in homes where parents don't smoke, their children usually don't smoke either.
I am the way I am because my grandparents taught me what not to do. They gave me morals. They gave me belief. They gave me something to believe in. They just taught me well. I love them. I do.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of one-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Well, welcome back, people, to the second segment of the first hour of Blood River Radio. Like I told Sam and the audience in the beginning, I'm so excited about Wee Wee My Pants when we found out we had got the one and only Michael King on. I've been chasing this guy for a couple of months, and evidently, like he said, my communiques must have been blocked because he didn't get any of my communications, thanks to Michelle and company at TexMars. They were able to run interference for me, and we got him on. And we have this guy who, I'm telling you, I admire him as much as anybody in the whole world. His name is Gene Andrews. I call him Mr. Marine Jeans. And Mr. Marine Jeans has read the book, if I'm not mistaken, of Michael King's book. And he's going to drive this interview tonight. But before we go to that, I'm just going to welcome on board, Mr. Michael King. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great, and I'm glad you found me after all this time. It's good to be here.
I cannot tell you how excited I am. And I have a fellow on the night. He's going to pretty much drive the interview. I'm just going to be kind of like the master of ceremonies, et cetera, et cetera. Because Gene has actually taught history in high school, and he's read your book. He's actually done something I hadn't done. He's read your book. And also, Mike, don't let me forget, I'm picking up a lot of noise, strange noise. Is that you, one of you guys' phone? It's getting a lot of like bell ringing or something like that. So see if you can figure that out, guys. I don't know where it's coming from. Sam might be able to run it down. But anyway, tonight, and don't let me forget, Mike, because I have the crappiest memory you've ever seen. We want to plug your book, and we want to plug that promotional deal, which you and I talked about last week.
Sure.
But listen, now I'm going to go to Gene. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Hey, Gene, how you doing tonight, fella?
Oh, doing great. How are you doing?
I'm really excited. I bet you're as excited as I am, because me and Gene talked about this back in October. Me and Gene kind of do a little bit on the book, The Bad War. Gene's actually read the book. We're going to handle it tonight. I'm getting ready just to throw a few suggestions out there, and then I'm going to let you guys take off. We'll let Mike take off and go as long as he can go, and then Gene can ask him questions and stuff. But, Mike, I would think, what do you think we should go back to probably the 1894 and start with Tolstoy and the great Russian writer and what he predicted with the Franco-Russian alliance? And if you want to, we can even go back before that to, the 1870s with, what's his name, Moses Hess. But You want to? Sure. You can either start there and go forward through World War, because we hopefully, well, God, we can get you on for two different shows.
Okay. Well, so yeah, it's a big topic, but that's kind of what's unique about the Bad War. You're not going to find many, if any, World War II history books that begin the narrative in the 19th century, and you really need that run up to give you an idea of you know what finally happened in the 1930s and 40s. And you brought up that quote by Tolstoy. That was in reference to the Franco-Russian alliance, which was formed in 1894. And, you know, he smelled the rat. He saw it very early. He says, you know, this is nothing but a trick by the West, France and Britain, to drag Russia eventually into a war against Germany. And this, mind you, is 20 years before World War One. So already the chess pieces were being deployed. And that's what Tolstoy said. And the exact quote I have here is, the Franco-Russian alliance cannot now present itself as anything else than what it is, a league of war. And, you know, it's pretty clear, and even some establishment historians will talk about this, how Germany was being encircled already at that time. And, you know, once you understand that, it gives a lot of added context to not only World War One, but, of course, World War Two. The big picture being that Germany being the German people being united and powerful and industrious as they were, if you were going to have any kind of a united Europe and New World Order, they had to be subdued. And France would never be able to do that one-on-one, nor England. Only way to do that is to encircle Germany and bring Russia into the mix. And that's what they did. They began offering Russia dreams of maybe one day taking back Constantinople for Eastern Orthodoxy. And that's how they played Russia for fools, too. But yeah, I mean, the roots of this thing, it's critical to understand. They go back to the 19th century. And once you see that pattern, it becomes very easy to understand that Germany, far from being the villain of World War One and World War Two, was the victim, 100%, the innocent victim. These were defensive wars on Germany's part. And I'm glad you brought that up to start the story with. It's very important to set the pieces.
Yes, sir. Before we go back to Gene, Mr. Mike, I got to tell you one more time. I'm so excited. I'm about to stutter because I've tried for months to get you on, fella. But anyway, before we go to Gene, I was going to say, I would guess that the this thing we call the New World Order, the international bankers, that the international Zionist Jews, I know people are going to cringe when I use the J word, but Mike, would it be fair, before we go to Gene, to say this, you know, these people think in terms of 50 years, 100 years, 200 years, for us, you know, us regular Americans, Irish, English, whatever, we think in terms of the here and now. So what you're saying is that Germany was, they were looked at that time as the big stumbling block, the big barrier to the New World Order international banker dream. Is that right?
Germany and also Russia. So even though Russia was brought into this alliance, it was brought in under a false pretext, because really what they were aiming at was a twofer. You get Russia to come in from the east, and then you could destroy both Russia and Germany. And that's kind of what happened in due time. So, yeah, but those would have been all Central and Eastern Europe. They were working on subduing them. The Rothschilds had already pretty much captured the foreign policy of Britain and France. And now they were heading eastward. And it's interesting, also in my book, I point out that there was an alliance prior to this between Russia, Germany, and Austria-Hungary. It's called the Three Emperors League. And that was designed to suppress some of the communist movements that were already starting to bubble up, and also to block the influence of the troublemakers, Britain and France, in Central and Eastern Europe. And that was a solid alliance. And I go into it in the book, in the Bad War, how dirty tricks by the British Prime Minister, Benjamin Disraeli, Jewish Prime Minister, he broke up that league, and he was able to drive a wedge between Russia and Austria-Hungary. But, you know, it's important to understand the game they were playing was to pit the great powers of Russia and Germany against each other and then conquer them both. That's essentially what happened.
You know, it's always the same suspects at using their same motives. And one last thing, I'm going to go right to Gene. You know, I think it was around 1813, 1823, when Napoleon lost at the Battle of Waterloo. That's when, pretty much if I'm not mistaken, when Mayor Rothschild was able to buy the Bank of England. I don't know. Maybe the international order, the world order, had even started before that. Hey, Gene, come on in.
Yes,
you got any, where would you like to talk? What question would you like to ask now, Gene? You go and throw the ball to your court.
What an honor it is to be on the same program with Mr. King. I've read the book over and over again. And I will admit to our audience, it's a hard read because it will make you so mad that all I could read is about four or five pages a night and then get upset with myself and you know, how we've been duped and lied to and brainwashed. And not just World War II and World War I, but really since 1861. And a Southerner, it's easy for a Southerner to see this happen because the same lies and misinformation and propaganda that was thrown at Southerners to exterminate us was then turned around and used on the Plains Indians. Then it was turned around and used on the Spanish in 1898, the Germans in 1917, 1930, and just right on down to present day. So I highly advise people getting a copy of Mr. King's book. It will really, really open your eyes to what's been going on and where he starts back in the 1870s and 1800s and brings it on up to post-World War II.
Well, okie doke, Gene, we're going to go right back to that. And when we come back, we could just say that Napoleon said that, I'll quote Michael King on this, the history is a myth that men have agreed to. Well, with that, folks, we're going to a break right now. We're going to come right back to Gene.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Rick Vincent.
There has been no response from the White House to the images of North Korea's efforts to rebuild a satellite facility that could also potentially launch missiles. Representative Brendan Boyle tells CNN President Trump has had an inconsistent and ineffective strategy with North Korea.
It's been all over the map over the last 2 years. First, ratcheting up rhetoric to a very dangerous degree with his infamous fire and fury comment. And then to go from that to, quote unquote, we fell in love, which he's not just said once, but remarkably has said numerous times, to now hear where we are, which to me has not been surprising.
Work to dismantle the facility began last year, but stopped as U.S. talks stalled. On Friday, President Trump said he would be disappointed if North Korea was to resume weapons testing. R&B singer R. Kelly walked out of a Chicago jail today shortly after someone paid $161,000 that he owed in back child support. This is USA Radio News.
Ask yourself, if you built a van for your business, where would you start? At the beginning, of course. With the people who invented the work van over 100 years ago, Mercedes-Benz. You'd give your new Mercedes-Benz Sprinter advanced technology and safety to keep you connected and protected. You'd make it available in diesel and gas, and there would be thousands of configurations and upfits to choose from. You'd build it right here in the USA, because your one-of-a-kind business deserves nothing less than a van that's built for you. Introducing the all-new Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, the safest, most innovative Sprinter yet, starting at just $33,790. Built for you, the all-new Sprinter, built in the USA. Mercedes-Benz, vans, born to run.
MSRP excludes all options, taxes, title, registration, transportation charge, and dealer prep fee. Options, model availability, and actual dealer price may vary. See dealer for details about costs and terms. Equipment described as optional. 2019 Mercedes-Benz Sprinter available soon.
The House of Representatives voted 407-23 to pass a resolution that broadly condemned hate and intolerance, including anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim discrimination. Republican Congressman Ted Yoho was one of 23 Republicans that voted against it.
It was a show vote to show that they were taking action against one of their own members. If Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic Party were really serious, they would have done the same thing they did to Steve King to Representative Omar. If not, it's hypocrisy at its worst.
The resolution followed comments by Democratic Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota that critics from both parties labeled anti-Semitic through the resolution did not reference Omar by name. Former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz told CBS this morning he's considering an independent bid for president as an alternative to get Trump out of office.
I think Republicans are looking for a home. And if Republicans have a choice between a far-left, liberal, progressive candidate on the Democratic side or President Trump, President Trump is going to get reelected.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hey, I'm just an old chunk of coal.
Well, I'm just an old chunk of coal. Sam's an old chunk of coal, too, but he ain't as old a chunk of coal as I is. Well, anyway, people, we're getting ready to go back to Gene. Gene, we had to cut you off at the break, fella, but you being the history teacher, and you have actually read this book. So I'm going to go right back to the one and only Gene Andrews, the Marine, the Vietnam Marine, who I love so much as a brother. Okay, Gene, take it away, fella.
Like I was saying, it's a great book. It ought to be required reading in every school in this country to open the young people's eyes and get away from this brainwashing and propaganda that we've heard. It's really interesting. Of course, my area of expertise and interest in history was the War for Southern Independence, but over the last few years, I've started reading more and more of the factual information about World War II. David Irving's book, Hitler's War, and now Mr. King's book, The Bad War, and it has really opened my eyes. But the funny thing about it is when you try to tell somebody that, they go absolutely ballistic. People just cannot believe what you're telling them, and you start citing these facts and information from what the Germans said, not what we said they said, but what they actually said. And people just cannot believe that. They turn on you like you shot Santa Claus or something. And it's interesting, women more so than men. I've talked to men about it, and they say, well, you know, that's interesting. I've never heard that before. And some of the women I've talked to, they just go absolutely ballistic about it. So, you know, people, I don't think, want to admit that they've been lied to and fooled their whole life. And to say that, you know, what we've believed for two generations is wrong, they just don't want to own up to it. But like I said,
well, that's right. Yeah.
You can see it happen to us, so you know how it could happen to Germans and other people around the world.
Well, that's right. Well, you know, with men, the stumbling block is usually the ego, because you have to admit that you've been played for a chump all your life.
Oh, yes.
That's very hard for men to do. With women, it's a different kind of block. With women, they're terrified that of the mere thought of coming to believe something that puts you in the 1% of society and not fitting in with the group. Women are very social animals, so that's what scares them. It's not so much the ego, but the idea that, well, if I believe what you're saying, that makes me on the margins of society. I become an extremist, and I can't handle that because I got to fit in with the herd. So it's a different kind of psychology. So it's like kind of like the worst attributes that women attribute to men are block them from seeing this truth, and vice versa. But it's tough.
Well,
to break through. You're right.
We probably need you know, one of these days we'll have to get a Virginia Abernathy on here. She's our psychiatrist friend at the Vanderbilt. But Mr. Michael, before we go to World War II, like we said, World War II, to quote you, was planned years and years in advance. World War I, let's go to World War I, if you will. We'll go forward from Tolstoy in 1894. We'll go to about 1913, 1914, when the British were jealous of the growing power of Germany, the growing expertise? What actually started that conflict, World War I?
Well, there's two factors that converged. And this is the main one, the big picture. You have this movement to establish as a long-term project a one world order, a new world order, which means all the existing systems and kingdoms and monarchies had to be smashed up, broken up, rearranged. And these globalists, these one-worlders, who were really the focal point of them, is the international Jewish bankers. In order to achieve that end, they made common cause with British and French nationalist imperialism. So they were able to say to them, hey, look, you know, Germany's, they're eating your lunch. They're making the best products in the world. They're underselling everybody. So they played on that nationalistic jealousy. So now you've got two factors converging. The British and the French, they were indeed jealous. And, you know, that just worked perfectly with the overall New World Order desire to kind of rearrange Europe. And then at the end, I'm talking now like after World War II is over, they kind of just, they threw the British and the French, they used them up just like a used up lemon rind, and they threw them out as well. The globalists threw out the British and the French, and they ultimately lost their empires. And today they don't even exist as nations. They're basically just, they're like counties, you know, of the European Union dictatorship. So yeah, those were the two converging factors, the globalism and the British-French chauvinism, with the globalists being superior.
Well, you know, before we go back to Gene, you know, I mentioned earlier, and I'm sure you know far better than I do, that around right after the Battle of Waterloo, Mayor Rothschild was standing around the London stock market. And he had a better intelligence system than any of the warring powers. And he knew who won the Battle of Waterloo between Wellington and Napoleon. And so he started acting gloomy, and through tricks, he made the people in London, the bankers, think that England had lost the war. So the stock market went crazy because he went in and started selling, and that's how he got, you know, through trickery, he got control of the Bank of England. So at that same time, the question I have to throw to Gene, he got control of the Bank of England, the Bank of Germany, the Bank of France, the Bank of Italy, through all of his sons, if I'm around that time, right around the early 1800s. I've wondered why he picked Germany I see what you said, but I wonder why couldn't he have started started in France? Why couldn't he have started an alliance between Russia and France? I mean, excuse me, Russia and Germany against France, etc. I don't know what the hell I'm saying. I'm gonna go back to you, Gene. Go ahead, fella. I'm getting too complicated for my own good. But Gene, you go ahead, fella, and then after that we'll.
No, I think Mr. King needs to answer that. I think that's a very important question.
Well, you know, they couldn't touch Russia at that time. You know, Russia was kind of the only country. I mean, they had their tentacles to one extent or another in so many of the countries of Europe, but they couldn't touch Russia. So they would ultimately have to create an adversarial posture. But where they were strongest was Britain and France. And that's just the way it developed. You know, had they developed in Germany and Russia, they would have probably turned those countries against the West. But England was the main base of operation because of the five sons. Nathan, he was just the biggest one because of the scam he pulled. I mean, he was already the wealthiest man in Britain. But then when he pulled this scam of you know, pretending that Britain lost at Waterloo so he could buy the market low, he increased his wealth like 20-fold. He basically bought up Britain at that time. And that's when Britain became the enforcer, the true enforcer arm of the New World Order, and then later on France. And then, you know, after World War II, when those countries were pretty much broke, and cut down to size, that role passed to the United States. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, United States, they try to rule the world and this and that. It's not true at all. We're just a tool. And, you know, at the end game, the United States will get discarded as well, just like Britain and France, as they convert to a global system. I mean, that's the plan. So, you know, the true power, the true enforcer arm, and jump from country to country because they have no loyalty to any country in particular. It's just where they happen to set up shop and what's more convenient to them. But right, you know, right now, you know, the U.S. is their wholly owned bitch.
You know, it's so, like that movie Independence Day. These space aliens come in and they take over a planet and just use up all the resources and the humans and just suck it dry and then move on to another planet. And basically, that's
sort of like that. Yeah,
what's going on? Yeah, that's for sure. Wanted to bring up one point, and this is in your book, but I really got my eyes open to a lot of this way back in 1965. I ran track at University of Georgia, and our track coach, Forrest Towns, and his wife would always have a cookout for the track team the weekend before we started our outdoor season, which was usually down Florida Relays in Gainesville. So he was talking to us, and he said, this story that you've heard about Hitler and not shaking hands with Jesse Owens because he wasn't a part of the master race was totally a lie. And he told why Hitler, by the International Olympic Committee, was not allowed to go down and congratulate the athletes. Now, he gave the speech that you're given, we welcome the athletes of the world of the 12th Olympic Games, declare the games open. And we'll finish that up after the break.
People, thank you so much for holding on. I'm really enjoying this interview. I hope I'm not messing it up. I've got one quick question before we come back to the break to Mike, and then we're going to go right back to Gene, take up where he was. So hang on to your folks. Hang on to your hat. We'll be right back.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
Well, people, I'm glad you hung on. I'm glad you hung on through the break. We're getting ready to go back to our wonderful guest. Mr. Mike, before we go further, You know, you and I had talked about doing a deal of where we could ask people for the people that would contribute $100 for your book. It would you could get it. We could get it autographed, and we could Blood River Radio could get some of the money, but you could get the lion's share of the money. And the purpose for doing that is so we can continue to spread the word. We can continue to support wonderful people like Mike, who against all odds and taking risks to himself. He's published this book, which I believe has been banned off of Amazon. But is that true? I thought, Mike, we would get some kind of a deal where we could get your book. And for anybody who wants to send that $100, if you want to do that, of course you can go and you can buy the book cheaper than that.
You just let me know. I guess give me a list, and then I'll forward it to them autographed. It's a wonderful book, by the way. Beautiful artistic cover. Stunning. It's 8.5 by 11. About 320 pages, 600 illustrations, very powerful illustrations. I put as much effort into picking out the illustrations as I did the writing, because I truly believe a picture's worth 1,000 words, and this really brings the era to life. I've got a lot of old headlines from newspapers, which support my case that I make. It really is a powerful book because I wrote it in such a way that anybody could pick it up and get right up to speed. It's very readable, and I keep it so simple, yet it's not simplistic. It's just something that, it represents for me years and years of study, and it's all distilled so somebody doesn't have to go through all those years, and they can pick it up in a matter of hours. So,
you know,
but yeah, that sounds like a good deal. And you know it's true, and you know it's powerful. You know it's effective by the mere fact that Amazon banned it after 3 years of very good sales.
That's true, Mike. You know, and the great Tex Morris, I followed him for years, and his great and loyal partner who's taken over his show pretty much now, Jerry Barrett. Jerry Barrett is the one, and Tex turned me on to your book. And they did that. I mean, you're talking about rave reviews. And if anyone's ever knows anything about Tex, the guy he's a brilliant. He taught history at the University of Texas at Austin. He's taught. He was an Air Force officer, and he raved about this book. And Tex has published many books himself. But I think it's a fantastic book. I really do. And I know Gene can vouch for that. But people, if you would, what the best you can do, if you want to order a book, an autographed book from the one and only Mike King, you can send us, you can get in touch with us with, it's on our website at bloodriverradio.com. You can go in there and find out, send us an order. We'll get that order to Mr. Mike, and me and Mike can get together and decide how to do that. And naturally, Mr. Mike will have to get he'll get the lion's share. But if you'd like to support Mike King and his book, if you would like to help us, help Mike, help Blood River, help us try to get rid of these ingrained lies that have just been pounding at us so hard. It's just like Gene said, it's almost impossible to wake people up with the facts. We'll get back more before we leave the show, because we're going to have Mr. King on for the whole 2 hours tonight. And he's only the second person in history that's ever been on for 2 hours like that. And before we go, okay, so now one point I'd just like to throw out there, and I got this out of your book, Mr. Mike. At the time, you know, I was talking about why did the international Jews start trying to plot in the different nations against each other. I don't think that the international Jews had a central bank in Russia, because I think in your book you said that at the time, probably until about the 1900, that the Tsar might have been the richest man in the world, and so he didn't need no stinking international Jew bank. But with that said, starting with, let's go to World War II, then we'll go and then go back to Gene and let you roll, Mike, first, and then Gene can ask questions later. I guess a lot of historians have said, and I've got this from your book too, that Germany started the war when they invaded Poland in September of 1939. But like you pointed out, another little fellow that a lot of people might have heard about by the name of Joseph Stalin in the Soviet Union, they invaded Poland too. So, but yet no, nary a word is said about that in any of the history books. We jumped on Germany. I say we, our central government here in the United States and the international bankers came on down on Germany with both feet But yet they assisted, and our glorious leaders here, our communist leaders here, the FDR and General Marshall and General Eisenhower, they did all they could to help the Russians. So what's up with that, Mike? Tell the audience, why would we go to war with Germany for invading Poland, half a nation, when the Russians invaded the other half? What's up with that?
It's an interesting double standard, isn't it? But it's even deeper than that. Poland was really, they were used. You know, the history books portray Poland as a weak country, innocent country, and the big bad bully Hitler went in there. They don't give you the backstory of what's going on for the previous 20 years. After World War One, a huge chunk of German territory was given to this newly formed nation of Poland. Prior to that, the Polish people belonged to either the Russian Empire, Prussian Empire, or Austro-Hungarian. And after World War One, they redrew the map. And they gave Poland the country. But they took a chunk of German territory, and 5 million Germans were ethnically cleansed. They said, with the clothes on their back, basically. They're like, okay, you're not in Germany anymore. This is Poland. Get out. 5 million people. They conveniently omit that fact from your history books. They reconfigured the map in such a way that Eastern Prussia, Germany, was totally isolated from the rest of Germany, and it was surrounded by Polish territory. You look at it on the map, I got it in the book, it's the craziest thing. And Poland was agitating that they were going to take Eastern Prussia and the city of Danzig, which today is Gdansk, Poland, and they were provoking Germany relentless. It was a military dictatorship. It was really ruled by a mad marshal named Edward Rydz Smigley. And again, they don't teach you this in the history books, that this guy was a megalomaniac. He had already seized a piece of Czechoslovakia. He threatened Lithuania. But he was being propped up by England, France, and behind the scenes, FDR. They're basically saying to this Polish dictator, look, you guys start the fight. We'll come in from the west and assist you. And when it's all over, you'll have all of Eastern Prussia. You'll have the port city of Danzig. And you'll even get part of the rest of Germany. So he had visions in his head of restoring the old Polish Empire that existed in the 1700s. And that's the truth. Poland, which was armed to the teeth, had the third largest standing military in Europe. They were provoking. And I mean massacre. When I say provoking, I'm sorry, they were massacring German people who lived, who were stranded in Poland. There was these militia gangs made up of Jewish Bolsheviks and also ultra-nationalistic Poles. And this went on for years, the physical abuse, and Germany complained about it. And this is not Nazi propaganda. This is true. And this goes back to the 20s. So finally, when the situation became unbearable, that's how the war broke out, September 1st. Poland started it 100%. And people might say, oh, why would Poland pick a fight with mighty Germany? Well, first of all, Poland was not weak. But more importantly, they were promised support from Britain and France that they would immediately enter the war, which they never did, by the way. They declared war, but they basically did very little on the Western Front. So, in other words, they used Poland to pick the fight, and then they said, see you later. And then the Russians came in a couple weeks later, the Soviets, and Poland again appealed to Britain and France to say, hey, what about this defense treaty? They say, well, can't help you. They were really sold down the river. And one more point, even though the German-Polish War only lasted a month, Germany lost 25,000 men plus 30,000 injured, okay? So the fake historians will have you believe Poland was weak and their military was on horseback and this and that. Not true. They had modern weaponry. They had been preparing for war for years. They had submarines, ships, planes. I mean, think about it. They inflicted on Germany in like 30 days, like the equivalent of a half of the Vietnam War in terms of casualties, American casualties. So Poland was no joke. But that's the role that Poland was manipulated into. And again, it goes back, you know, remember we talked about earlier how they played the Russian Empire into coming into a war, and then they sold out the Russians. They did the same thing to Poland. They used this megalomaniac dictator to pick a fight with Germany. And that's what got the ball. That's what enabled France and Britain to make a declaration of war. And I've got headlines in the book from all these fake newspapers saying Germany invades Poland, Germany bombs Poland. They don't give you any of the context. they just have you believe Hitler woke up one day and said, hey, I'm going to go into Poland today. And on it went all throughout the war. Every time Germany went into a new country, they presented it as Germany's newest aggression. But in reality, every single case was preceded by British or later on Soviet maneuvers to set up shop in a given country. And they had to go in and stop that. So it wasn't like he was out to conquer Europe. He was just out to stop the aggressors from encircling him and attacking him from neighboring countries. And that's the truth.
Well, I was going to say, when we come back after the break, I'm going to get Gene to respond to what you said, Mike. People, hang on to your seats. We'll be right back after this break. People, both the guests are going to be with us for the second hour. I forgot to say that. But hang on to your seats. We're getting ready to go to the second hour of Blood River Radio, and we're going to continue on with the same great interview. Thank you. Hang on to your seats.